Last night, the U.S. Supreme Court published a pretty big decision. The court gave judges more discretion in sentencing really young offenders to life without parole.
It could give some judges the leeway in their mind to impose this sentence more easily.
It's been a while since Michigan judges were applying this kind of sentence, but the ruling could be very important for a class of more than 100 people whose sentences are once again under the microscope. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The Supreme Court decision is seen as something of a reversal, because for the past 10 years, there's been a trend of cutting back on harsh sentences applied to young people. Since 2016, there have been several high court decisions that found life without parole when the defendant is younger than 18 is unconstitutional. As a result, more than 100 people in Michigan, all former juvenile lifers, are now free. But yesterday's decision throws a wrench into these trends of reform. Today, we're digging into what the decision is going to mean in Michigan and for juvenile lifers who are waiting for resentencing. Later in the pod, we'll be talking to an activist who was convicted of a crime that happened when he was 15 to a life sentence. But first, we want to speak with Deb LaBelle. She's an attorney, professor, a writer and advocate who focuses on applying human rights in marginalized communities. She has spent decades advocating on behalf of incarcerated people in Michigan. Hey, Deb, welcome to Stateside.
Happy to be here.
So the case that the Supreme Court was looking at was appealed based on a 2012 case called Miller versus Alabama, where the court found that a judge has to determine someone convicted of a serious crime as a juvenile is incapable of rehabilitation in order for them to be sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. It basically struck down laws that required mandatory life without parole for juveniles convicted of very serious crimes. How does this latest case, Jones versus Mississippi, fit into that?
So what Miller and then Montgomery said was that that a child could not be sentenced to life without parole without taking into consideration their status as a child, their capability for change, and all the attendant things surrounding that you're a child, you know, that you're not fully developed, that you're impulsive, that you lack a lot of experience and control over your lives. And the court said that only the rarest child should be sentenced to life without parole, that which was determined to be either irreparably corrupt or permanently incorrigible. Terms that many of us are still grappling with, because the psychologists that weighed in all said, well, as well as the faith leaders all weighed in and said, well, how could a judge determine that? What the Kavanaugh decision says is, well, you don't have to make a finding on that. You still have to consider that children are different. But then left everything up else sort of as mushy as it's been, frankly. Two of the problems, I think, with the decision is that it lacks an understanding of how it works at the trial level, and it shows a complete disinterest in how racial disparities and unequal treatment based on geography are playing out, for example, in Michigan. So we have over 140 people still to be resentenced here, from, you know, serving a sentence that the court, no one disagrees, is unconstitutional, and they have the right to be resentenced, over 140.
With those 140 some folks who are awaiting resentencing, do you see this, do you see yesterday's decision having an impact more on those cases or on how judges might rule on these kinds of cases going forward nationally?
I think both. Certainly, Michigan has the highest number awaiting sentence. Pennsylvania had the highest number, but their courts have taken care of this. And their courts have said, you know, set forth a whole number of things that judges have to find before they can give someone life without parole. Next door to us in Ohio, they took care of it in another way. They abolished life without parole like the majority of states have done. in this country now, saying, listen, it's too fraught with inequities. You know, the judges in Kent County are giving out life without parole as if it's candy. And the judges in other counties like Washtenaw have refused to give it out to anyone. And so it has a deep unfairness and inequity, and it's racially tinged the way it's being given. And so this does not strengthen what we know that the court has held in a series of cases, that kids are different and they deserve a second chance. And in fact, it could give some judges the leeway in their mind to impose this sentence more easily, which I think makes it incumbent upon our legislature and our courts to strike this down as unconstitutional.
Deb, I know that you followed outcomes for those juvenile lifers who were resentenced in Michigan. What can you tell us about what's happened with that cohort?
So, you know, over 225 have been resentenced, leaving the what's left, 143. I think it's about 6 or 7% of those so far have gotten life without parole, but that's sort of a little bit of an unfair way to look at it, because the majority of those cases, the prosecutors did not seek life without parole again. So the problem has come up that all of those are on appeal. Some of them came from judges that said on the record that they didn't believe in Miller and Montgomery. So there are a bunch sitting up in the Michigan Supreme Court that were awaiting the Jones decision to see if there had to be more explicit findings when issuing it. And Jones said no. But I am hopeful that our courts will say, okay, but we still have Miller and Montgomery, and they are still the law. And the law still says that the rarest of you should not be given an opportunity for release.
What can you tell us about the lives of people who had their sentences reconsidered and who were freed as a result?
You know, there have been, there have been 80, 90, 100, about 110 who have been released. And others are pending parole hearings. Of those 110 that have already been released, there has been absolutely no recidivism, nothing. They have come out, the parole board was correct, that they could readily join our communities and their families again and be participating citizens, and they have been.
We need to take a short break. And when we come back, we're speaking with someone in the thick of this.
Yeah, I can call back as many times as you need me to, so that's not a problem. I'll just let you know it cuts off at 15-minute mark.
An activist and juvenile lifer. Stay with us.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from Kalamazoo College, offering a personalized education that combines critical thinking, curiosity, and creativity. Committed to preparing students for meaningful careers that make a positive impact on the world. More at kzoo.edu.
Efren Paredes is serving a life sentence without possibility of parole at Lakeland Correctional Facility in Coldwater. And he's one of these people we've been talking about whose sentence is getting a second look. Efren, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
The court's decision effectively empowers states to make their own discretionary choices about the sentencing of juveniles. It basically gives judges in states where this happens an extra degree of freedom to follow their own state's rules. What should people know about how that discretion was used in the past in Michigan?
Well, in the past, prior to the Miller ruling, we know that children were receiving life without parole sentences, mandatory life without parole. Subsequent to the ruling and then the Montgomery ruling in 2016, you know, the U.S. Supreme Court made clear six times they stated in that ruling that only the rare juvenile offender should receive life without parole. Up until now, since those rulings, judges in this state have pretty much rejected life without parole sentences for juvenile offenders. 94% of the cases have received term of year sentences, which are sentences that will allow them to be reviewed by the parole board at some time in the future. So the number that of people that have received life sentences again has been small.
In recent years, we've seen the Supreme Court follow evolving science on brain development, agreeing that people who are in their teens are basically cognitive works in process. And that has been, up until now, kind of the guiding principle. Do you see this decision yesterday sidestepping that issue?
I don't. You know, one of the things that they made clear in the ruling yesterday, they said today's decision does not overrule Miller or Montgomery. They also mentioned that even though you don't have to make the formal fact finding that a juvenile offender is irreparably corrupt, if the person's crime reflects transient immaturity, they cannot receive a life without parole sentence. So that is still clear. And because giving that sentence would be a punishment disproportionate under the Eighth Amendment standard. So they have not removed that language. That language is still very clear. And as Justice Sotomayor said in her dissenting opinion, you know, because they said that they're not overruling Miller or Montgomery, sentences are bound to continue applying those decisions faithfully. And I believe that that's what's going to happen in Michigan. I don't believe that judges are going to reverse the progress that we've made since the Miller ruling, where only 6% of people are receiving life without parole sentences again.
Do you see this decision changing much then for defendants or people who are incarcerated in Michigan?
I hope that it doesn't. You know, judges have applied the factors in Miller and Montgomery pretty fairly. If we say that 94% of the time juvenile lifers are not receiving the harshest punishment that the state allows, I think that's a good record right now. Even the small amount of cases that have received life without parole, the Court of Appeals has been overturning those cases.
People may realize that there are more than 100 juvenile offenders who are having their cases and their sentences reexamined because of the evolving legal decisions on this issue. And the last time we talked, you were waiting for a hearing, and COVID had made it extremely difficult for the normal legal process to play out. Can you bring us up to date on what's going on?
Since then, we talked, I believe, last April. Since that time, 25,000 people incarcerated in Michigan prisons have contracted COVID. I contracted the virus in December of this past year, and I was one of the lucky people who was able to recover. So nearly 70% of the people in Michigan prisons have contracted the virus so far. I went to court in early October of 2020 for a mitigation hearing, and I will be receiving a ruling on my case for the judge will make the determination that Jones versus Mississippi talked about yesterday about whether I am entitled to receive a term of year sentence or if the judge would uphold the life without parole sentence again. That ruling will be made next month.
Did the judge who sentenced you make any finding of permanent incorrigibility?
In 1989, are you talking about, or are you talking about now?
In 1989.
Well, in 1989, the issue of permanent incorrigibility wasn't even something that was being discussed in courtrooms as it related to juvenile offenders. I was 15 at the time, and I was there's less than 45 juvenile lifers in the state who were 15 at the time of their arrest. And I was the first juvenile to fall under the automatic waiver law, which allowed prosecutors to automatically transfer me to adult court without having a hearing in the juvenile court. So there was a lot of politics that were, you know, swirling around this issue. My case actually happened 1 month before the Central Park jogger case, the five youth in New York who were wrongly convicted of a crime there and later exonerated. But the backlash from that affected a lot of juveniles across the country. And during the 1980s and early 1990s, states made it easier to send juveniles to not only to adult courts, but also to adult prisons. And I happened to be going through the process in the midst of that.
There are a lot of people who look at crimes committed by people who are serving life sentences, and they feel pretty strongly that those who were convicted should remain in prison for the rest of their lives. Efren, what would you want those people to know about your own experience?
I think that my experience shows that people, particularly children, have the inherent capacity for change. I've done a number of things in my life to not only progress and evolve as an individual, but to also help enrich the lives of other people. And, you know, we demonstrated an abundance of evidence of growth and maturity during my court hearings last year, which is what Miller said. You know, Miller wanted to know, said that judges have to make the tough decision between distinguishing the cases of someone whose case reflected transient immaturity or the person who is irreparably corrupt. And, you know, we showed a wealth of evidence to show that I don't fall in the category of being irreparably corrupt, permanently incorrigible, and forever beyond rehabilitation.
Are you in contact with any other folks who were sentenced to life as juveniles? I'm wondering what other people are telling you about the reaction to the decision yesterday.
I am, you know, and I'm in contact with a number of people, both serving life without parole sentences and even people who have been released as juvenile lifers and gone on to live productive lives on the outside. And many other people share my same sentiment that this case doesn't change the Miller or Montgomery cases that the U.S. Supreme Court previously handed down, and that sentencers will continue to follow the trend that has been set in Michigan and not abandon the language in those landmark rulings.
Efren, we know you have to go. Thank you so much for talking to us, and we wish you well next month.
Thank you, April.
And that's the Stateside Podcast. I'm April Baer. You can find full Stateside shows online at michiganradio.org. We hope that wherever you're listening, you'll take a minute to rate us and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Our executive producer is Laura Weber-Davis. Today's episode was produced by Rachel Ishikawa. Our theme music is by 14KT, with additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.